Well, thanks very much, Ricardo. So today I'd like to do two things, but actually the first session's basically done one of them. But anyhow, you can hear my view on, which is to discuss the current state of play in the securitisation market. But Ricardo basically stole all my pictures and stuck them up in that right at the beginning there. Anyhow, besides that, I will describe some prospective changes to the Reserve Bank's repo eligibility criteria for asset-backed securities. So the aim of these changes is to improve the information available to the market about Australian asset-backed securities, and goes very much to the conversation that you've just heard. So let me start with the current state of the market. And so here's some data on annual securitisation issuance in four jurisdictions over the last few years. And we don't have data for 2006 for the UK and Europe because it's very hard to, well, at least we found it very hard to come by. But I've noted on several occasions at this forum that securitisation markets were likely to take a considerable period of time to adjust to the post-crisis environment. You can certainly see that here. So we're now more than 5 years on. Can we have the pictures rather than me up there, please? I don't make a very good picture. So more than 5 years on since the first wave of investor concerns about structured finance, securitisation issuance is still struggling to recover in most countries. So as you can see there in the US, new issuance in 2012 so far is a little over half the level seen since issuance peaked in 2006. And of that, it's basically all still exclusively by the government-sponsored enterprises. Private label issuance of RMBS in the US is pretty much dormant. Some other sectors of the market seem to be recovering, as we just heard, particularly securities backed by auto loans and credit card receivables. And Australian issuers are tapping that segment of the market as well. In Europe, issuance sold into the market has been negligible since 2008, as you can see. But if I move on to the next slide, so what we've done here is this includes securities which have been put together but haven't been sold into the market, and they've, as Henry was talking about, basically all gone to the various central banks, both in Europe and the UK. So there have been a very large number of those securities put together for use as collateral with the ECB or the Bank of England, almost none of that sold into the actual market. In Australia, RMBS issuance in 2012 has recovered to the point where new issues are replacing maturing issues, so the stock outstanding is no longer declining. So let me show you this picture, which is the one Ricardo had up a few minutes ago. So we've split this into securities which are issued offshore. So this is where they're issued, not where they're bought. So the securities issued offshore is the top bit, and you can see a lot of that is amortised away now. The yellow bit is the bit the AOFM has bought, and then the blue bit at the bottom is the bit that's been issued onshore and bought by investors other than the AOFM. So the issuance in the year to date has totaled about $10 billion. So by way of comparison, in the second quarter of 2007, so just in one quarter in 07, issuance amounted to $25 billion. This year we've had about $10 billion in the whole year. So given we're now 5 years on from that peak of issuance in 2007, and although amortisation rates have slowed somewhat from their pre-crisis rate of around 20%, only around 10% of the pre-crisis issuance remains outstanding. So most of the pre-crisis issuance is now rolled off. Most of the pre-crisis stock comprises issues that have yet to amortise below the 10% threshold required before clean-up calls can be executed. About 15% of it, though, is issued by entities that aren't around anymore, such as the old RAMs. But this year we've seen some positive signs in the Aussie securitisation market, particularly over the past several months. So despite the periodic bouts of turmoil in offshore markets, there's been a steady flow of new issues. Primary spreads have gradually tightened this year, and a number of deals have been fully placed with external investors. That is, no tranche has been retained by the issuer, including a number of junior tranches have been sold as well. More recently, in the last couple of months, several issues have been completed with little or no support from the AOFM due to the strong private investor demand. And of course, the underlying collateral that stands behind Aussie asset-backed securities continues to be of high quality, with arrears rates on Australian mortgages remaining low. The structure of RMBS deals continues to evolve. Issuers have reduced their reliance on lenders' mortgage insurance, for instance, as credit rating agencies have discounted the credit enhancement LMI brings to a deal. Instead, issuers have lengthened seasoning periods and increased subordination to enhance credit quality. So the average seasoning on the issuance that we've seen thus this year has been around 48 months. Compared to, if you go back 3 years, the average seizing was more around 36 months. As was mentioned earlier, some preferences has emerged for bullet structures to minimise prepayment and extension risk for investors. Offshore investors in particular, as we just heard, have shown a preference for bullet features, while the domestic investor base is generally more comfortable with pass-through securities. Issuers have looked to incorporate arrangements such as liquidity underwriting and rollover features to provide bullet-like structures to deals. But there is a limit to the ability of issuers to incorporate bullet-like structures into issues without significant over-collateralisation or liquidity underwriting costs. ABS have always been about passing through cash flows, and prepayment risk must ultimately be borne by and paid for, more importantly, by someone. So this preference for bullet-like structures has also been, I think, part of the demand for non-RMBS asset-backed securities. So issuance of ABS backed by assets such as auto loans and trade receivables with their shorter maturity and more predictable cash flow profiles has quickly returned to, and in fact, this market is actually now exceeding its pre-crisis level. At this forum last year, I said I thought covered bonds were likely to be used to access funding offshore, while RMBS would continue to be the main vehicle used to raise asset-backed funding onshore. I reckon within about a couple of months I was probably proved wrong on that one, but anyhow, that didn't quite how it panned out earlier this year when there are a few very large covered bonds issued domestically. But I think that had mostly to do with the price. And I think, as Henry said earlier, if you're going to get offered something like that at that price, it was hard to resist. So local buyers did find it hard to resist the yield on offer on those early covered issues. The wide spreads on the first covered bond issues also repriced the primary RMBS. So what I've got on here is, so the orange line there you can see is the covered bonds, and you can see that for a five-year covered, you see that tightening down to somewhere between 50 and 60 basis points at the moment. The green dots are RMBS which don't have the IOF in them, and the yellow dots are RMBS which we had, which have IOFM support. There are no dots around the time of the first covered bond issuance because the covered bond pricing basically drove MBS right out of the market. And if you looked at secondary spreads, then they also blew out at the same time. But as the covered bond spread has actually come back in, you can see that MBS has now returned to the market. And also in there, you can see the cost of unsecured issuance. So at the time that the first covered bonds were issuing was a particularly dislocated time for credit globally. It had something to do with the wide price, which you can see also reflected in the unsecured issuance price. But you can see the two of them have tightened up quite considerably over the past 12 months or so. So now, 12 months on after their inception, banks have issued on average around a quarter of their covered bond issuance caps. So what I've got here is for the four majors plus for Tim's benefit, Suncor, who, as he said, have also issued a covered bond. You can see there how much has been issued so far, how much capacity has been utilised, and how much capacity is still remaining. So covered bonds now, I think, seem to be performing the role that I expected 12 months ago of attracting a different investor base and providing an important source of funding diversification for financial institutions. So what we've seen over recent months is that covered bonds have basically been used to issue access offshore funding. Domestic RMBS have been used to access onshore funding. So with that, by way of introduction, let me turn to... I'm out of slides now. You can even put my picture up now if you want, because I haven't got anything more to show. Let me turn to talking about something we've announced today around enhancing information on securitisation. So as I've just shown, the RMBS market has gradually improved, but there clearly remains scope for further improvement, though, as I've said on a number of occasions, you shouldn't expect the market to return to its pre-crisis levels. So one avenue which should help facilitate improvement is enhancing the information available to the market about the securities on issue. So with that in mind, I'll talk about some changes the Reserve Bank has announced today that aim to increase the information available. So there is increasing demand for more transparency in securitisation from both investors and regulators alike. And one objective for improving transparency is to ensure that investors, other market participants and regulators all have access to relevant and reliable information in order to monitor risk. Another aim is to improve document standardisation, which can help to stimulate liquidity in the securitisation markets. So as you're probably all aware, there are a number of initiatives in various countries, some ongoing, some already in place, that seek to increase transparency of securitisation. This is encapsulated in the IOSCO report on global developments in securitisation regulation. And in relation to standardisation of information, that report proposes that IOSCO members encourage industry to develop best practice templates and encourage industry bodies to work with their counterparts in other jurisdictions to ensure harmonised treatment. So the announcement that we're making today is consistent with the objectives contained in the IOSCO report, and in that regard is supported by ASIC, who had made a significant contribution to that report. Similarly, as a number of you are probably aware, in Europe and the UK, loan-level reporting has also been introduced by the ECB and the Bank of England. As is the case in Australia, the main drivers of this initiative were the need for those central banks to get standardised information on securitisation. So I just showed you a bit earlier how much securities have been put together in those two jurisdictions to access central bank collateral. Given that those central banks now have a lot of that stuff on their balance sheet, they need to have a better understanding of it for their own internal risk analysis. But it also has the benefit of providing broader transparency into the market. So the changes we're announcing today are part of that global initiative. So as you're all probably aware, for around 5 years now, the Reserve Bank has included asset-backed securities amongst the range of collateral eligible for our domestic market operations. Self-securitised RMBS proved to be beneficial during the height of the crisis in 2008, as the RBA was able to help to stabilise funding markets, providing liquidity against them. So during 2008 and 2009, they accounted for around about 50% of our collateral. Now they're down to less than 5%. The advantage of having these securities in place ahead of time is that the Reserve Bank is able to assess their value and quality ahead of when we actually need to use them. So rather than trying to do the credit assessment in the middle of the crisis, we actually have some understanding of what the securities are ahead of time. Similarly, in recognition of the role that these assets can play in stress circumstances, APRA has encouraged both large and small ADIs to self-securitise some of their assets and put arrangements in place with us to be able to provide liquidity against them. Now, most ADIs already had that in place, but some of the smaller ones have been working with us to put those arrangements in place over the last year or so. More, at least as importantly, for large ADIs, these securities will be important from 2012 when the new liquidity regime under Basel III and the committed liquidity facility that the Reserve Bank is providing as part of that liquidity regime are coming into place. So even though none of these assets and very few unrelated RMBS are held on the Reserve Bank's balance sheet today, the fact that they are eligible for repo means that the bank must always be fully cognizant of the risks that these assets carry. They're potentially an asset that's going to turn up on our balance sheet at some point. The information that we currently require of issuers is largely about the core attributes of the security. This includes, for example, the information memorandum, high-level data relating to the asset pools backing the securities, and a list of mortgage insurers present in the pool. In part because we felt it was an appropriate time to do so, 5 years after we've added them to the eligible collateral list, and in part ahead of the introduction of the committed liquidity facility, the bank has been conducting an internal review of the reporting requirements that we have for RMBS. And as a result of this review, today we're announcing some enhancements to the information we're going to require for people to have their securities be repo eligible. In a nutshell, these will require that issuers provide the Reserve Bank and the broader public with more comprehensive and up-to-date information on the securities. While some information on RMBS is generally available in the market, reporting standards can vary significantly across issuers, since there is currently no regulatory standard for RMBS reporting in Australia. The available data also tends to be dispersed in a number of different locations, making it difficult to gather. So, in consultation with the ASF, we have been seeking to achieve some uniformity and greater depth in the information reported. Broadly speaking, the information that we're going to require covers both transaction-related data as well as information on the underlying assets, such as anonymised loan-level data. Loan-level data that is anonymous. details of the information that will be required at least every quarter, so be provided to us at least every quarter, on both existing and new MBS issuance are set out in reporting templates which are available now on the Reserve Bank's website. These templates are aligned with the ASF's current best practice RMBS reporting and disclosure standards, and they're also consistent with those which have been developed by the ECB and the Bank of England. These reporting templates standardise reporting of RMBS data across Australian issuers who seek repo eligibility of their issues. They will help the bank to value more precisely the securities we hold on our balance sheet in terms of both price and risk. And in that regard, as a number of you are aware, for self-securitised MBS, we apply what effectively amounts to about a 22% haircut because we're unable to get a very firm value on the price of those securities. With this data, we feel we'll be able to provide a much finer pricing on that, which potentially means for some issuers getting more value for those securities than they do currently. They will also decrease the bank's reliance on credit rating agencies in assessing the value of these securities. As well as applying to those securities issued in the market, we're going to require these requirements also apply to self-securitised MBS. So we're going to put out the same reporting template for both MBS which are out there in the market as well as self-securitised MBS. But as I mentioned, just as importantly, while they're a benefit to us in providing us with more information to more understand the risk and price these securities, we're going to require that this information also be made available to the public at large, which should help provide a benefit to the broader market by providing more transparency to Australian MBS. So what we're going to require is that issuers make these reporting templates available to the public free of charge. Issuers will have to inform the Reserve Bank of where the data are being stored and where they're being and how they're being made available to the public. It will also be a requirement, not surprisingly, that issuers ensure that the data are actually accurate. The proposed reporting templates we've put out today are open for comment until the end of the year. Again, though, I would note that we have worked with the ASF in putting these information templates together, so we haven't just plucked them out of thin air. They are broadly in line with the templates that the ASF has been talking about with the industry for the last while. Having taken of any comments we receive between now and the end of the year, we will provide some final reporting templates early next year. Once that is done, issuers will have a transition period in which to make the information available to us and to the market. At the end of that transition period, if the information is not available, the security will no longer be repo eligible. RMBS issues that don't meet the reporting requirement during the transition period, however, will remain repo eligible. So I'd encourage issuers to use the transition period to develop the reporting systems and the data handling infrastructure needed to comply with these new requirements. Moreover, during the course of next year, the bank will also make available for comment reporting templates for other asset-backed securities, such as securities backed by auto loans or credit cards, as well as templates for asset-backed commercial paper and CMBS. So to the extent that various asset-backed securities are repo eligible with us, we will have the same sort of reporting templates for them too. In terms of managing public availability of the data, the bank is placing no specific requirements on where issuers must make these data available. And this is one of the areas of the new requirements on which we're very keen to receive industry feedback. So let me conclude. As I mentioned at the beginning, the securitisation market is continuing its gradual recovery, but there is scope, I think, for it to recover further yet. One avenue that may facilitate further growth is the availability of more information, and more standardised information in particular, than exists currently. So in that regard, and I said for a number of reasons, including our own reasons to better understand the risk that we potentially are taking onto our own balance sheet, the Reserve Bank has put out some enhanced information requirements for repo eligibility of asset-backed securities. These information requirements should not only benefit us in assessing the quality of the securities provided to us as collateral, but hopefully should be of benefit to the market as a whole. So with that, let me finish, and I'm happy to take any questions on what I've just been talking about. Thanks.
What if I throw one question? Where are interest rates going on Melbourne Cup Day? I'm kidding. but one thing I was interested.
It says no response is received yet.
One thing, I'm not one of those type of journalists, but one thing I was interested about before we talk about securitisation specifically, when you were talking about mortgages and the high quality of Australian mortgages when we refer to RMBS, what do you see are the risks to the quality of Australian mortgages, especially when we're going through an environment where the economy is slowing? Do you see any risks there?
I mean, at the moment, we're not seeing any particular movement in the arrears. They're actually going sideways right across, have been so for about a year. Generally, not surprisingly, the biggest risk to arrears rates is unemployment. And the unemployment rates drifted up, but only by a little bit. There are a lot of... I suppose as in MBS in particular, there's obviously a lot of credit enhancement, so they're actually fairly well protected, even from a reasonably adverse development. But as I said, at the moment, we're not seeing any particular trend in arrears rates. They've really been going right across the country pretty much, with the exception of a couple of little pockets, going sideways for about the past year or so, and at still a very low rate.
We're getting some questions coming through right now, so let's start with the top one we can see there, Guy. Guy, will existing RMBS be grandfathered as far as reporting requirements and eligibility are concerned?
And that one's an easy one to answer, and the answer is no. This applies to all existing and future MBS. So, they're all repo eligible with us, so there's no grandfathering here. The grandfathering is in the fact that you've got some period of time before this actually takes effect. That's the extent of which you're giving you some notice. There's going to be a period of time to get this data available. So that's the extent to which there is grandfathering. But this will apply to all securities that are repo eligible with us. Obviously, of course, you have the option to no longer have your security be repo eligible with us. But to the extent you want that, then you'll need to conform with this requirement.
Another one there, which I've seen a couple of times come up, what is the RBA going to do with the data and who will house the data?
That's something we're open to hearing about. From our point of view, we will probably need to conduct a tender to find out who's going to provide us with the platform to house the data. Whether those, from the issue, to some extent it's up to the issuers in terms, we will have some minimum reporting standards so that we actually can use the data. We don't want to end up with 45 different versions of the data across 45 different platforms. So we'll talk about how we're going to house the data and say issuers will need to be providing it in a form that we can actually use it. But that's something which we're certainly happy to have a discussion with the market or with issuers over the next few months.
These changes, how do they relate to what's being done around the world? Is there anything you can compare it to?
Yeah, very much so. So as I mentioned earlier, the ECB and the Bank of England actually already have pretty much the same standard in place. Any issuers who have got... some people in this room may be reasonably familiar with that. So they've already actually developed a reporting platform for that data, and that's something we'll certainly use or certainly look at in terms of what we're going to be doing here. So it is very much in line with what's been done in Europe and the UK. The information we're looking for here is almost exactly the same as that they're requiring there.
Okay, another text message. Will our updated property values be required in the new reporting standards for RMBS and covered bonds?
I don't think so. Amongst other things, my understanding is that the banks don't actually have that data, which would be an interesting requirement to require them to have that. But as most of you are aware, there's a loan to valuation ratio on the initiation of the loan. It's not necessarily tracked through time. So that's not a standard reporting feature at the moment. It's not something that we're looking to require.
Have we spoken about the transition period when it will end?
No, we didn't. I was a little deliberately vague around that.
That was a question from the.
No. It's a fair enough question. So the timetable as it is at the moment is we'll have this consultation period over the next couple of months. Sometime in the first quarter of next year, we'll put out a final reporting template, and then at that point, we'll put out a timetable for people to comply with that. One binding deadline is that the committed liquidity facility comes into play January 1st, 2015. We need to have this in place by then. But we also have, and related to a question which was asked earlier, we have to build this, our capacity at the same time as well, which is not something we're going to be able to do overnight, so that's going to take some time. So without being too precise, it would be somewhere between a, you know, between 1 and 2 years, basically. Sometime during the course of 2014, I would say.
Okay. With the new reporting requirement, how would the RBA monitor the quality of such information? Will any auditing be required?
Yeah, so we're going to develop various... I mean, one of the things we're going to be developing is various metrics for us to be able to analyse the data, in particular some metrics around analysing the quality of that information. So, again, this is something which has been, which is already in place in the UK and in Europe, exactly around those sort of things, and we'll be looking to the practices that they've adopted there in terms of verifying the quality of the information.
I've got plenty of text messages coming through. Another one, is there any likely change in related party rules for MBS repo?
Yeah, I mean, potential. I mean, one thing in terms of getting more, well, under the committed liquidity facility, in terms of relatedness, I'm not sure if this is exactly what the question's going at, but in terms, we will still only expect to see self-securitised mortgages used in stressed circumstances. However, under the committed liquidity facility, they will be one of the major, I would expect they will make up a sizeable component of the potentially repo eligible assets that banks will be holding on their balance sheets to meet that, to meet the liquidity requirement. So they won't actually be presented to us, but they'll be presentable to us under the CLF. So we would still, though, normally own, well, only expect to see those assets on our balance sheet in stress circumstances, not in regular circumstances.
Don't forget, you can still send some questions through. The number is 0429 883 481 if you've got your phone on you. So it's 0429 883 481. Enter the code ASF2012 and then include a space before you type your question. Another one there, will the RBA still use market values for RMBS?
Yeah, I mean, we will. I mean, what for the securities which are traded in the market, yes, we will. One advantage of having this greater data requirement is actually for us to be able to revise the price of the securities which are not in the market. So at the moment, for instance, a lot of the self-securitised MBS have fairly large differences in terms of duration, in terms of coupon, in terms of weighted average life. At the moment, we don't really have any differentiation in the way we price those. When we have a greater amount of data available to us, we'll be able to more closely match those securities with the securities we're actually trading in the market and potentially, at least in theory, provide a little more granularity around the pricing than we do currently.
Okay, one question that I have here, will a pluralistic approach to data dissemination result in fragmentation of data, which doesn't produce much utility for the rest of the market? And from the way I was explained it, it's saying that the RBA is saying it won't, unlike the ECB, award a contract to a single data vendor.
So we haven't decided... Sorry, I didn't say... I said we are going to tender for a data vendor. It doesn't mean that one person won't necessarily... There may only be one, from our point of view at least. There may only be one data provider that we use. I mean, yes, if you have... I mean, the data. I mean, one of the things we're going to be mindful of is the data is going to be usable for the public. And currently, the data is not available. So I think at least we're moving to a world which is better than that. I mean, we are going to require some uniformity in terms of the way the data is provided to us, because otherwise we're not going to be able to utilise it. So to the extent there's uniformity in the way it's provided to us, there's also going to be uniformity in the way it's provided to the public. What we are not going to do is say is basically award a monopoly to one data provider.
I think we've just got enough time for a couple more questions. You've tried before. Will you again to get other key central banks to reciprocate in allowing Aussie collateral accepted in their system, provided it's in their local currency?
I can continue to bang my head against a brick wall if you want, but I mean, to the extent that we're going to get, I mean, I don't see any great possibility of Aussie asset-backed securities being repo eligible in Europe anytime soon, if that's what the question's on about. They've got a whole, compared to all the collateral issues they're dealing with at the moment, thinking about extending it to Aussie asset-backed securities is just so far off their agenda. That's, you know, not something they're going to be interested in devoting much time to any time in the foreseeable future. So I've had a definitive no on at least two or three occasions. I don't really see the point in getting another definitive no.